BGRT Gaming Podcast, episode 599, recorded on January 12th, 2021.
Edition of the TD Gaming Podcast and 432nd episode of Video Game Roundtable. I'm TJ Dunzer.
I'm Scott Durf.
And I am Jonah Falcon.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry and a gaming flashback.
You know, that date has a lot of ones and twos in it. 1-1-2-2-0-2-1. Do you know that the inauguration's on January 20th, 2021, and I was thinking, hey, that's 1 plus 20 equals 21.
Yeah, that's pretty crazy.
So, anyways, we do have a gaming flashback. This time, it's Rugu. I know what you're saying. What the hell is Rugu? Well, Rugu is a downloadable puzzle video game for the Xbox Live Arcade and Microsoft Windows, developed by American studio Spidermonk Entertainment, and published by South Peak Games. Now, there's a name to name your developer, Spidermonk. The objective of the game is to guide special-shaped meteors through a series of rotating disks and save the planet Ru and ultimately the Rugu race. Shapes include triangles, squares, circles, stars, and so forth. Each level, the player is given a set level of meteors to try and allow safely to pass to the bottom. When properly aligned, disks allow the blocks to fit into the hole. When the meteor pile is heavy enough, it descends to the lower disks. So, if I'm going to describe this to you, imagine disks with shapes in them, and you have to guide those shapes through the holes. Otherwise, you just bounce off, and the vine on the side gets longer. If it gets too high, you lose. Obstacles include Mimus, enemies who impede the block's movement. To get rid of the enemies, they must tap the blocks to make it move faster and just bonk them out of the way. There are also butterflies that will grab a falling stock, and you'll have to do the thing in reverse, in which it's going up instead of down. In later levels, different gameplay mechanics come into play, such as different stacks of meteors that feature different shades of the same color within the stack, which requires the player to match the shades by scrolling through the stack to make sure the proper shade is aligned. The game includes more than 45 puzzle levels with single-player, two-player, same machine, and party game modes, online multiplayer, and includes bonus challenges and stages as the game progresses with new shapes and characters. The game was followed by Rugu Twisted Towers on the Wii and Rugu Attack on the Nintendo DS, and the Xbox Live Arcade version was delisted in 2012. This is a game I played at PAX East way back when, I think in 2011, and I instantly fell in love with it. It's such a shame when a game like this is delisted, and I looked at it, it was like, you can get the demo. Now, since I owned Rugu, I'm pretty sure I can still download it, because when something's delisted, it means you just can't buy it anymore. If you already own it, you can still download it. And it's available on Steam for the grand total of 99 cents. The thing about it... What?
Or... You said it's delisted, but it's on Steam, so what is...
No, it's delisted on Xbox Live Arcade. But it's not delisted on Steam. It's 99 cents on Steam. The problem I have with it is that all of the instructions for the Steam version are for a keyboard, but you can play with the gamepad, but it doesn't tell you which buttons do what, and you have to do it quickly with trial and error. And it's basically the bumpers rotate left and right, and the A button just, you know, makes them go fast.
Go to the options and look at the controls.
You can't do that. It doesn't list the controls for the... But it works. Here's the problem. I think that they're never going to patch it. Because here's the other thing. It runs in windowed mode. And if you maximize it, it gets really jaggy and there's nothing you can do about it. So basically, it is just there... You can buy it for 99 cents, but they're never going to patch it. They're never going to improve it. But it is still a lot of fun, and I'm going to tell you something. The difficulty, the first 8 levels are really, it's kind of dull because it's really, really easy. But that difficulty level just ramps up when you get to the 20th level, then it's like, oh, crap. Yeah. I never played the Wii or DS versions.
The Wii probably was interesting. You probably use motion control, which would, I think, give the game a bit of a different feel. than using a keyboard or controller. The graphics look nice. They're pleasant. So yeah, I mean, for 99 cents, it's a good deal on Steam.
Yeah, Twisted Tower says it's functionally broken. So, the camera and control layout conspired to work against what you would be an insultingly easy... Okay. So, yeah, I think it didn't use the... it was one of the rare games that didn't bother using any of the motion controls. But it was basically the same game. Oh, no, wait. It did use the motion controls. You used it to point at what you... But again, it's clumsy, and you're just better off using a regular keypad. It's like... Not even worth it. Rugu Attack sounds like it would be sort of like Tetris Attack.
I never saw this before. I've actually never seen this game before.
Really?
Yeah, I've never seen it either. So it's very
sort of like Yusamin. No one's heard of these games. They're sort of like these games that slipped in and out of Xbox Live Arcade very quietly.
I guess that's why it ended up delisted.
No, there has to be a different reason why it was delisted. You just don't delist a game without a reason. There was also, you know, I mean, hey, look, they didn't delist Street Trace NYC, and no one played that except for me.
It's, I don't know, man.
Yeah. So I, you know, it's one of those games. It's 99 cents. It's one of those games you can play like 15 minutes at a time. You know, chill, do if you get sick of Tetris or other action puzzle games, you can do this one, which is basically literally fitting around a square peg in a square hole, and a round peg in a round hole, and a heart-shaped peg in a heart-shaped hole. You know, basically Tetris meets Lucky Charms. Anyways, so yeah, like I said, 99 cents, check it out. And it's only going to cost you almost nothing. Anyways, what have you been playing, TJ?
I can talk about this because it'll be off of embargo tomorrow morning. I've been playing Scott Pilgrim vs. the World, the game, complete edition.
Oh, okay, so wait, did they announce it? I think they did announce it, right?
Yes.
We discussed this in a podcast a while ago.
Yeah, it was, I think it was one of the Ubisoft press conferences last year.
So, here's the thing with Scott Pilgrim. The reason why it was delisted, if I recall, was that the music licensing, which is usually what kills a lot of these games, is, yeah, music licensing, you're out of luck.
I don't know, because, like, there's a lot of licensing caught up in that. There's the fact that Brian Lee O'Malley owns the comic, Universal owns the movie rights, Anna Monoguchi owns the music rights, and so it was kind of a mishmash of different IP owners involved in that particular case.
But here's a question. Was that game based on the movie or the comic?
It was a tie-in to the movie. It launched literally in the same month as the movie did. That is... I think, like, Scott Pilgrim versus the World... the game being delisted was one of the larger arguments about, like, the preservation of games and digital content and who actually owns the rights to these games once you buy them. Because it's a really good game. And, like, going back to it...
Maybe you should describe what kind of game it is. It's a scrolling beat-em-up.
Mm-hmm. It's very, 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 very much like River City Ransom.
Yeah.
In which your character levels up by fighting, they get XP by fighting, but you also...
For those who don't know, it's also a retro game, it's one of those retro RETAUX, which imitates 16-bit games.
Mm-hmm. And you have stats that you boost by going to by getting money from defeated enemies, going to shops, and buying different food items that that raise up your strength, defense, speed, and weapon power. So it's a little bit tedious in the way that, like, the problem with a lot of River City Ransom style games is that they don't drop the whole idea that you have to, like, sort of grind out money to boost your stats, and then when you get to later levels, if you haven't done that, you'll pretty much get your ass kicked in just a couple hits. Scott Pilgrim still does that, which is kind of annoying, But the game is so charming from a visual and musical standpoint, and then the gameplay is just pretty fun. And then for this complete edition, they brought on online co-op, where you can do offline local, or you can bring people in from your friends list to play, which I think is just perfect. Like, that's really all you need to do to make this game worth it in 2021.
Let me ask you a question. How did Streets of Rage 4 manage to avoid all those problems you said that are with River City Ransom-type games?
Streets of Rage doesn't have a stat grind. You you play the same all the time in Streets of Rage 4. There's no level ups or stats to worry about. That's just the thing that's like... River City Girls came out, I think.
It was announced, I know that.
It came out in 2019, I do believe. But it had that same issue as well. The game is gorgeous. It's really fun. I really like the combo system in River City Girls, but you have to grind in it. You have to grind money to buy items that boost your stats, and if you go to later levels without boosting your stats, you'll get your butt kicked. And so that's just kind of a thing that's like, people... I like that, but I understand why people wouldn't like the tedium of it. That said, I really have a fun time with this game. I kind of was worried that I'd go into it and the rose-colored glasses would fall off, and I would realize that this wasn't as good as I thought it was. No, it's as good as I thought it was 10 years ago. I love the game. The music. I still listen to the music.
Is it the same music?
The music for Scott Pilgrim, even before I knew the new game was coming out.
Is it the same music, though?
It is.
Oh, okay.
Onomatoguchi is really good. Their music is a blend of chiptune and rock.
I was about to say, just remind people that these guys are chiptune guys.
Mm-hmm. And I would argue that, like, from beginning to end, like, Another Winter in the first level, Party Stronger in the fifth level, like, there's just so many good tracks in this particular game that I could just listen to for hours on end. And in fact, I do. I usually put this music on in the background while I work. So, I'm really happy to see this game back in action. It's coming out on literally, like, every system. It's going to be on PS4, Xbox One, both forward compatible. I've been playing it on PS5. It's going to be on Switch. It's going to be on PC. It's even going to be on Google Stadia, if that's your thing.
I wonder if it's going to be on Game Pass.
Maybe.
Oh, no, it can't. No, here's the thing. Ubisoft has that agreement with Amazon, so it'll be on Amazon subscription service. Which is... Oh, damn, I forgot the name of it. Anyways, but it's on... If it's an Ubisoft game, it's available as a streaming game on Amazon service as well.
Isn't there a thing called Uplay?
No, you're thinking of something else. No, this is something completely different.
But yeah, literally available everywhere on January 14th, so check that out. That it is well worth the play if you like beat-em-ups. I would say that even despite the tedium, it's got so much charm and enjoyability to it and replayability. It's worth it all around.
I wonder how much it's going to cost.
Probably $49.99.
No, I would say $29.99, really.
Yeah, because
Nope, it says $35, so I'm close.
I was gonna say because it was a Xbox. I do believe it was one of the Xbox Summer of Games games.
Oh no, I'm sorry. Those are for the physical editions, and yes, they are releasing physical editions. For those of you who are worried about, you know, things that are delisting, if you have it on a disc, you don't have to worry about that.
That's true.
Yep. The limited run games version, like the special edition, looks so delightful.
There's a $99 version, a $55 version, and a $35 version.
There's also an $140 version.
Maybe that's what I was looking at.
I assume
it comes with a statue, the knockout edition.
It comes with an actual like little stage diorama with the characters and drumsticks. And
comes with hardcover books. Comes with CDs and cassettes. Cassettes. They really want to go retro with this shit. Full-size wooden tank sticks decorated with game-specific craftsmanship. 3 versatile gauged guitar picks and screen with sticker sheets. And yeah, they're just going nuts. And comes in an internal system with working light and sound that acts as a collector's case. Yeah. I mean, if you're going to have a special edition that goes all out, just go all out. Anyway, Scott, what have you been up to?
I have been playing Aria, A Story of Seasons.
And okay.
Yeah, it's a charming game where you start off, you're the Aria is the daughter of a winter lord, and whose son and Arya's brother has gone missing, and she basically swears to go and find him after their area.
Wait a minute. Hold on. Spell it, because there is Legends of Aria, there's Aria Chronicle, and there's an Aria dating simulator.
Oh, wow. Okay. Ari. Sorry. Story season. Sorry about that. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, there's a lot of Aria, so it gets a little confusing.
Aria. Okay.
Aria from the
game. No, Aria. No, there's a game called Aria that's a first-person horror game from 2016.
Wow. Yeah, really better get the spelling right. So Ary, Ari, and so yeah, so she goes out to go find her brother. She takes his clothes and
oh, we discussed this. Yes, this is the game that TJ was really excited about. TJ, this is the game that was the one in which you can change the seasons around you. That platformer. Remember, that's the one you were excited about.
Yeah, it looks good. I remember. The mechanics in that game looked really fun when we watched the video for it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a lot of puzzle solving because you have to use the seasons to change your environment to reveal platforms or remove platforms or obstacles when they get in your way. You get weapons and you fight these hyena dogmen or whatever that are attacking you, and you get power-ups so you can level up stats. And there's little stores where you can buy stuff, buy different clothing items or, you know, restoratives. It's pretty challenging and interesting so far. I'm liking it. I think the music's nice.
I'm trying to place the art style. It reminds me of a different game that has a similar art style. Actually, it looks like you're playing with Xbox avatars, to tell you the truth.
Hello. So that's what I've been playing.
Okay. I've been continuing to play. I had to take a break from The Walking Dead: Saints and Sinners because there's a lot of stuff going on. I started getting back into it, and I've started getting, you know, into exactly what I should be doing, and that is make sure you have a knife at all times or some weapon, because it's a lot easier just to grab a zombie by the head and poke him in the head and kill him quickly. I'm also getting into the crafting, and, you know, it's unfortunate that it's the kind of game I can only play for an hour before I have to stop, before I completely lose my lunch, and not because I'm nauseous, just because wearing that thing just makes you nauseous anyway. It's not motion sickness. It's just, you just get a cloudy head from playing a lot of VR. Did you ever finish that game, TJ?
Which one?
Walking Dead: Saints and Sinners.
No, I'm kind of locked into a corner where I might have to go back if I can.
So you have to do an early. Yeah, the save points in that game suck.
Well, that and like the more time passes, the more zombies there are, and I haven't managed my resources well enough to deal with because like one of the things is that like medication for sickness in that game is really hard to find. And you gotta really ration that stuff out, or else you're gonna be kind of screwed when you get to like day five, day six.
Yeah, I had to redo that stupid Blue Mansion again because I forgot to grab the note that she wants, proving that your husband killed your kids. He sucks to be you.
Bummer.
But otherwise, you know, I'm getting into it. Like I said, it's possibly the deepest VR game that I've played, including Half-Life Alyx, because Half-Life Alyx, yeah, it's a great shooter, but this one has crafting. This one acts like it's a real game. Crafting, exploration, having to look at the map, put it back again. And I'll tell you the truth, I would love to see this game without without a zombie thing. You know, so, another game that uses the same mechanics that's more of a role-playing game. Like, I would love this to be a first-person role-playing game, much not my, like, sort of like a first-person Mass Effect, you know? So, yeah. Have I been playing anything else? Not really. So, yeah, I mean, there hasn't been much I've been able to play lately. I mean, there's stuff that I'm waiting for. Oh, right, I finished Cyberpunk 2077.
You finished it?
Yeah, I got one of the endings, and I sent it back. It's not compelling enough for me to... Because it does give you a save point right before the final thing, so that you can, you know, finish other stuff, or, you know, choose different things when you're going into the tower. I mean, what I like is that there are storylines. If you complete it, you can select that as your, as, cause Johnny will ask you, okay, how are we gonna do this? And since I finished the storyline with Pan Am, I said, yeah, I'm gonna go with the Arakados. I'm gonna do this with the Arakados, you know, I'll do it with Pan Am. Johnny wasn't thrilled, but if I had finished his quest in which, you fish the Rogue quest, I'm pretty sure I could have had, oh, let's do it with Rogue. You also get a choice in whether you're going to do it as V or if you're going to do it as Johnny. Mm-hmm. Because if you remember in the beginning of the game, Misty gives you some pills, says, well, the blue ones are blockers and the red ones are enablers. When you take the red ones, you let Johnny take over. The first time you do it, it's hilarious. Because what does Johnny do? He goes to the bar, and he says, give me a beer. Drinks it down. Give me a beer. Drink it down. The rock music starts playing, and it's sort of like, he was supposed to go to talk to Rogue. No, he doesn't do that. He goes and starts drinking himself in, gets into brawls, goes to strip clubs, hits on hookers, is a general asshole. And it's sort of like he's taking advantage of taking control of your body just to fuck around now. He says that, no, the only way I could have contacted Rogue is for you know, to see me acting like this, and then she would have known it was the real me. But there is a meter in the game which shows how much of Johnny is taking over your brain. So when I finished the game, it was only at 25%. Mm-hmm. And I'm pretty sure if I kept doing that mission, it would have gone up and up and up, you know. I know there's a really bad ending that you can get into. I saw a YouTube video for it, which I'm going to check out when I get the chance. I got a really positive ending. I'm not going to spoil anything. But it's as positive as I think it can get. And I will say just one thing. My ending involved the giving a middle finger to Night City and leaving.
Yeah. Okay.
I mean, it implies there are other endings, you know. And I'm pretty sure there are endings which are darker endings in which you're now Johnny. Mm-hmm. Well, like I said, there's multiple endings. I returned it. I don't need to play it for a long while. The save games are there, so when I am in the mood to play that game again, and as far as a game, Cyberpunk 2077 is okay. The visuals are great, are really good. I'm telling you, have you gotten to the point in which you take the red pills so that Johnny can talk to Rogue?
No, I have not.
Okay. You're gonna fucking love it. It is just so audacious. When he gets into a thing with the bouncers, I chose the option, punch him. Yeah, the line is punch him, and the dialogue is, yeah, I missed this.
Interesting.
Yeah, I'm probably not going to take that, if I ever play again from the start, I'm going to see how low I can have the Johnny thing, because in order for that percentage to go up, you have to do things I think that Johnny likes. And that shows that you're becoming more and more like Johnny. Your choices are like Johnny. And when you take choices that Johnny would not have taken, it doesn't go up. There's also on the side a meter of how long you have till you die. Right? And that goes up. And I'm wondering, why is the meter there? And I'm thinking, you know what? I think the longer you play and the more side missions you do, the higher that meter goes up. So it's sort of like saying, you know, you can do these side missions, but tick, tick. I mean, here's the thing. There's no time doesn't pass. I mean, you can leave a mission off saying, well, I need to see you at this place. Yeah, you could just leave them there for a couple of days and you come back. Oh, I was just here. You know, that standard RPG trope and that things will wait for you to do it, these missions. Very few RPGs divert from that. The only one, the one of the RPGs I remember that didn't do that, if you remember from Deus Ex Human Revolution, if you fuck around the office too long, all the hostages are dead. Right? In this case, no, that doesn't happen, but the more time you spend doing side missions, I think the higher that goes up and the darker your ending gets. So, like I said, I haven't looked at any game facts. I haven't looked at any things. That's just what I'm assuming. And there are ultra-dark endings, from what I understand. I don't know if they're on the level of Shepard dies in Mass Effect 2 or not, but yeah, I mean, when you do that mission, when you do the mission that you say you're going to take the red pills to contact Rogue as yourself, as Johnny, it is fucking hilarious. Because you start acting like an out-of-control rock star, which is basically what Johnny is. And here's the thing. I did not expect Johnny to be so unlikable. And that's the entire point of the game, by the way. Johnny's not supposed to be likable. He's a legend in the terms of the game, and he's a legend in terms of the cyberpunk tabletop game. But yeah, they played Johnny to give you a reason that you do not want to be Johnny. Because he's a fucking asshole. And everybody says he's an asshole. And he acts like an asshole. And he knows he's an asshole. He doesn't care. I don't think it's a spoiler to say that the final boss is Adam Smasher. I won't say what happens there. But there is a decision you make with him at the end. Anyways, like I said, Cyberpunk 2077, even if it was bug-free, I don't know if it would have been my game of the year. I think I still would have went with Watch Dogs Legion on console.
Yeah. There's a... Cyberpunk 2077 is good in a lot of ways, but I don't think it's like the end-all, be-all game that everybody wanted it to be.
Also, it does a shitty job of doing tutorials. For example, one of the early missions has you having to rewrite optional thing is to rewrite a thing. The game gives you no clues on how to do it. I had to look at a fact to find out it's on a shard. Why? The game never explains what shards are. Shards are story elements that either give you information or give you an option to do something, but the game never tells you about it. So it's the one in which you're getting the bot, you know, that bot that you're going to invade the Suburo the Arasaka Tower with, you know, that robot that walks around the thing. If you want to be straight with the psychos, I forgot their names, you know, the people who are holding the bot, you, in order to clean it, you have to do the shard. And you never figure out how unless you look in a game fact. There's a lot of aspects of the game that are not explained to the player, and that tells me rush development. And that annoys me more than any bug. You know, I don't like playing a game and not knowing what things do. But yeah, I mean, the ending is set. My ending was satisfying, and I'm pretty sure all the endings are satisfying to a degree. I mean, they may be depressing as hell, but at least the writing is good enough. It's self-aware enough that you don't feel insulted by it. But as a game, I've seen better.
Maybe the first time Keanu Reeves has played a villain, I guess. Cause I don't.
Oh God, no! He's played villains before.
Okay. God, can't recall any.
He's not, he's an anti-hero in the very strictest sense. not the classical anti-hero, but he went through a lot of shit as a kid that made him despise Arasaka and corporations. And he will do nothing. He will nuke a building, which he does in the backstory, to get what he wants. He will nuke a building in the middle of a city just to try and kill somebody and make a statement.
Hmm.
I mean, it's not a secret. You actually play through that. I'm trying to remember. Is it a prologue in the game? Johnny setting off the bomb, going to the Arasaka Tower. I know it's early in the game. I don't know if it's when you first get the chip in your head, or if it's actually a prologue.
It is early in the game.
Yeah, I know. But I think it's a prologue. It's not the chip.
Prologue. It's
Oh, it's a flat. Oh, that's right. You wake up, and you remember this happening. Okay. Anyway, but yeah, Johnny's enough of a shit. He's actually gonna nuke a building in the middle of a city. Anyways, we're going to move on to game news. Jane Austen's MMO for Socialites shuts down. This comes from some PC Gamer. The high society MMORPG Everjane sadly shut its doors this year for good. Kickstarted back in 2013 for $100,000, Return Productions digital facsimile of Regency England was a curious twist on the genre. One that ditched swords and sorcery for an equally cutthroat world of gossip, mingling, and social ladder climbing pulled from the works of Jane Austen. Following various closed and public betas, the developer hoped to see a full release in late 2020. Unfortunately, it looks like the coffers ran dry for Everjane. In August, Return explained that a rough year had forced it to postpone the game's launch. Hopes to drum up subscriptions to cover the game's monthly server costs didn't pan out, and in December, the team announced that Everjane would close the estate by the end of the year. The game's promise shone even through on occasion, with one player telling The Guardian about their scandalous alter egos, from a traveling vicar to a gay barrister moonlighting as an opera singer. They wrote, "My characters have experienced sweet and tender poetic courtships, hot seductions, shame, and subtle triumphs. They've loved in secret, made calculating connections, and stupid mistakes in the name of friendship." Three Turns' final post ended with the hope that some rich benefactor might write in to buy the game, but that never happened. I actually played one of the open betas, and it was interesting. And judging from a lot of the comments, there's a lot of people who said, wait, this existed? I would have played the shit out of this. And here's... Yeah. Go ahead.
I think I remember hearing about this, but I never got to... I forgot about this, actually. Just said, but it sounds like an interesting concept.
When I played, it was kind of bare bones. But here's the thing, is that you cannot make an MMO for $100,000. And you have to subtract whatever Kickstarter's take from it is. So, there is a niche here that I wish someone would take advantage of, because this is the sort of game I would play. Rather than having swords or guns or anything like that, no. Your major victory is making someone shunned by society. That's your teabag.
A very strange-looking game. It kind of... It doesn't look good.
And
what I mean by that is, like, I look at this, like... This looks like... These look like RuneScape models.
Yeah, well, that's basically... like I said, it's $100,000 minus whatever Kickstarter took. But the gameplay was solid.
Yeah, I mean, like, if the gameplay was good, the gameplay was good. I would have to see... I think I would have to see this game in action.
And here's it's a very niche game. And you know what? This could have been what Second Life could have been. And...
It is what Second Life is.
No, but it's a gameplay mechanic. The gameplay mechanics of gossip and secrets... And, you know, relationships and all that stuff. Your stats are personality-based. You have status, kindness, duty, happiness, and reputation. That's part of your personality. And like I said, you know, I would like... Here's the thing. I am so bored of orcs and dwarves, orcs and elves. Orcs, dwarves, and elves, orcs, dwarves, and elves, orcs... And if it isn't that, it's a science fiction shooter. I remember way back when, you remember that Sony Online Entertainment was talking about having a spy game in which you played a spy in an MMO? It ended up devolving into being a shooter, you know, an online shooter, and it died on the vine quickly. But, I mean, the Secret World takes place in modern times, you know, and at least it's different in that it's more Cthulhu-based. But, there should be more MMOs that don't have swords, don't have guns, just having, you know, building a society and just being, you know, where being a troll means that it's within the context of the game, and the bigger the troll you are, the more powerful you are, getting other people in trouble. Or the opposite, being the sweetest little dainty flower that you can be. Like I said, it's a great concept. I wish they had more money. And I wish they had a bigger team.
Yeah. I would have to see this in action. I feel like screenshots don't do it justice based on the way you describe it.
Oh, no. Well, screenshots, basically. Yeah. That what you see in those screenshots is basically what the game was. I mean, there's more to it, though. You're right. I mean, this is a social game, you know. MMOs are supposed to be social, but how social are they really? I mean, maybe you have a clan, and you go on raids. That's it. I wonder if a cotillion would be sort of like a raid. A multiplayer raid, except you're a party of one.
Be interesting.
But I hope someone reads about it and say, you know, I could do better. Or, I don't know. I think it'll be a while before you see something like this again, but I'm hoping that it works. The problem is, and here's the thing, they had a subscription base. This kind of game is so ripe for microtransactions free to play.
Oh yeah, I could see that.
Buying a new dress, for instance. And here's the thing, if people buy dresses, that would be within... No one's going to care that, you know, you bought a dress and, you know, pay to win. No. They're buying a dress. That's what happens in the context of the game. That's real life. They're buying a dress. You want to make up, you better buy a dress too. Or you're not as high society as these people are. I mean, you can play a man, but, you know, that's not as fun.
I feel like this could be done on Second Life very easily with the right coding and mods and building whatever, and then you can actually role play with other people around the world.
Yeah, it sounds more like a MUD than an MMO.
Yeah, people have built Midgar in Second Life, and I haven't been in Second Life in a long time, but I do remember that there was a Lost Island for a little while.
Not since the flying penises incident.
Game of Thrones was in there too. That's right. You could run around Winterfell and see the big, the whatever the tree was called that has the red leaves. I just feel like something like this could be done very easily in Second Life.
Yeah. Anyways, you know, maybe they'll make a game based on Charles Dickens. Let's move on to the next item. Go ahead, TJ.
Alright. Bethesda Indiana Jones game officially announced by Lucasfilm Games from GamesRadar.
By the way, before we begin, there is another story that this is following, and that is Lucasfilm is back. They announced it, what was it, like 2 days ago?
Yeah,
2 days ago.
Right.
Lucasfilm, or would that be like...
Lucasfilm Games, getting back into the games
then. The studio that used to make games is back, basically.
Wasn't it called LucasArts before?
Yes and no. It was under Lucasfilm.
I wanna see that logo again. I missed that.
No, well, the logo, yeah, with the thing. But it was LucasArts, but it was run by Lucasfilm.
Right, but like LucasArts was like the group that made Full Throttle and games like that.
Yeah, yeah. But it's still Lucasfilm. It was still Lucasfilm.
A brand new Indiana Jones game has officially been announced with a teaser trailer. The teaser trailer is very stylized, invoking the vibe of a matte painting more than a video game. The camera pans across a desk full of notes and blueprints, with little Easter eggs about the game's development hidden on other items. The passport has a Bethesda stamp, and the typewriter reads Machine Games. The camera has Lucasfilm Games branding on it. The infamous first notes of John Williams' Indiana Jones theme ring out, and the Indiana Jones hat is removed to reveal a whip. The sound of it cracking emanates before the screen goes black. There are no other details, and the tweet accompanying the video states that it will be some time before Bethesda has more to reveal. Todd Howard, the game's executive producer, is the man behind the Fallout and Elder Scrolls series, so our initial thoughts are to expect something epic and open world, although Machine Games' work on Wolfenstein could also point to the project going in a first-person direction. The Indiana Jones game announcement comes just a day after the announcement of Lucasfilm Games. The studio is now the official identity for all game titles coming from Lucasfilm, and it's clear that the company plans to work with a variety of game developers on future projects, not just EA, which is responsible for the most recent spate of Star Wars games.
So here's the thing. This was done before Microsoft's official acquisition of Bethesda, which means this will probably be multi-platform. But what it also means is that whatever it is, it's going to be on Game Pass day one anyway.
Yeah, if it's owned by Microsoft, we can rest assured it'll probably be on Game Pass, Jonah.
No, but here's the thing. They're doing this for Disney. Disney is going to be publishing it.
Right, because Disney owns it. But I'm very excited because there hasn't been an Indiana Jones game in a very, very long time. And the last one that I really enjoyed
was Charles of Atlantis.
I don't know if this is going to be anything like Fate of Atlantis.
I don't think so. That was a scum game.
Yeah. Yes.
Oh, by the way, people who don't understand, I was not insulting it. Scum is S-C-U-M-M.
Yeah.
It's basically the engine they use for Maniac Mansion, which is the two M's in the game. I forgot what the full name is, but the last two M's mean Maniac Mansion.
Oh yeah, the something user interface for Maniac Mansion. In Fate of Atlantis it was a scum interface, and the unique thing about it though is if you wanted to have a more action oriented experience, you could select it by how you interacted with the bouncer that was at this club that was trying to keep you out. And if you fight him, you're basically selecting the game to be action-oriented. If you move crates around to get around him to the back door, then you're selecting puzzle. And if you talk to him and use your reference to a character named Sophie, you actually get to play the game with Sophie, and you play like kind of a co-op puzzle with the AI character. So kind of an interesting experience. And I don't know. So like I said, I don't know if it's going to be like that, or if it's going to be like Uncharted or something like a visual novel, even. Probably not a visual novel, but, you know, it's like that's what's kind of what TJ had said on the story, that it's kind of like a matte painting. And those that you see that a lot in these visual novels, it's like static art.
I think it's going to be a first person RPG.
Yeah. I don't know about open world, but I guess we'll have to see. I mean, is Todd Howard like gay in on the artistic stuff, or is he more of the...
He's a producer. He has final say on stuff.
Well, yeah, final say, but I mean, like, I don't know. Oh, yeah.
He is going to probably be... He's probably done the design documents, and Machine right. Games is going to follow them.
Okay. Yeah, because I'm very, very excited to see what this is like, because I haven't seen Indiana Jones game in a long time, and I always enjoyed playing The Last Crusade and Fate of Atlantis, and there was another one.
See, as an Indiana Jones game, I think by default it's going to have puzzles. What's going to be really funny is they make it like a Tomb Raider game. That'll be hilarious.
That, I guess it depends. I don't want it too much action. I want a balance. I think that's really just the prime thing about Indiana Jones is there's balance of puzzles, action.
If it's an open world game, I will roll my my eyes to heaven.
I really don't see it being.
I can easily see it being an open world.
I guess it could be, but I don't know what to see then. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. With machine games on Prime development, I don't know. Like, they have yet to do an open world. I don't know what that would look like.
No, that's why I think it's going to be more of a first-person RPG that is very puzzle-oriented.
I mean, maybe it'll be like Dishonored, but with Indiana Jones.
But I wouldn't count out a Tomb Raider-type game. Keep in mind, that would give them a perfect excuse to have different set pieces and just have the plane flying on the map as a connection.
Hmm.
So, yeah, we will see. But the thing that intrigues me most is this is being done 2 months before the official acquisition. So Microsoft does not own this. Or at least doesn't own the rights. It will be on Game Pass, just like Elder Scrolls is now on Game Pass, and all the other Bethesda games are on Game Pass. You know, I think it might be that Disney owns the rights for like the first 2 years, which is an eternity, by the way, in terms of games.
Hmm.
And then it reverts back to Bethesda.
All I want to know is, Todd Howard, what the hell are you doing not working on Elder Scrolls 6?
I think they have another team working on it, and Microsoft said, "Hey, Todd, sit down. We're gonna have some other people working on this."
That's what I was trying to say before. Is I think he's the kind of guy that goes around making sure the various teams are doing what they're supposed to be doing. If they need any executive decisions,
I think Todd is off the Elder Scrolls 6. I think this is his way of having a project of his own.
It's like you said, machine games, they're the ones going to be...
They're the developer, they're not the project manager.
Well, he could be the project manager. He could be the project manager of multiple projects.
I don't think... Here's the thing. When you are the project manager, your attention gets divided, and that's usually how you get disasters. I think Microsoft said, we have a team that's going to be overseeing Elder Scrolls, and Todd decided, you know what, I want to make a game. I want to be able to run a game, and it makes a deal with Lucasfilm. And Microsoft doesn't care because they know it's going to be in Game Pass anyway.
I thought Starfield was coming before...
Starfield's supposed to come out this year.
Right. Yeah. Oh. Even though we haven't seen anything of it.
Right, we've seen less of Starfield. We've seen more of this new Indiana Jones game, I think, than of Starfield.
You know what? I think I like that. I want to be surprised.
Yeah.
When was the last time you were surprised by a game? I will say Star Wars Squadrons was announced and almost immediately came out. So I think that was a surprise.
Surprising, definitely.
But I want to have a game that just pops out and no one knows about until it's actually out. Apex Legends, actually. Apex Legends. Hey, here's, I forgot the name of the developer. What's the name of the developer, Titanfall developer? Rebound? No.
The prototype developer?
No. Respawn. Right, Respawn said, here's Apex Legends. And people say, what? Where did this come from? So. Here's the thing. Let's do some speculation. I don't think Starfield will be Fallout in space.
I hope not. I think that would be kind of boring a little bit too predictable. I'm hoping to be surprised, like you said. I'd like to see something different. Because I feel like they've been doing a lot of first-person action-y games, and it would be nice to just see something really different from them that they don't typically do.
I hope it's also not a space sim and along the lines of Elite Dangerous and other, because that's been done to death now. I would like it if it's, I don't know. I would like. It's probably going to be an RPG. Just don't do it the same way The Outer Worlds was done. But no open world game, please. Anyways.
Yeah, I would agree that it, like, if I expect anything out of it, I might expect it to be something kind of like Elite Dangerous.
Well, we'll see. I don't know. It's just that I'm tired of Bethesda being so derivative, and often the derivative is basically cannibalistic, in which they're just copying their own games over and over and over. I just hope Starfield isn't a knockoff of something else. I hope it's something that's original. Well, like I said, they haven't shown anything about it. By the way, that's not necessarily a good thing also, because what did we know about Fallout 76 after they announced it? Nothing. Not until the game was actually released. So, we'll see. Oh god, imagine if it's just a space version of Fallout 76.
Oh man, that might actually be, it might be trying to duplicate Eve or something, where you have a space station and you're flying around and doing all these little things with other players. I don't know.
It'll, you know, it's interesting. Whatever it was, Sony was ready to have a console exclusivity over it. Because before Microsoft bought ZeniMax, Sony was in works to have console exclusivity of Starfield, whatever it was.
Wow.
There are people who know what Starfield is. Unfortunately, the people aren't the general public. Anyways, let's move on to the next item. This would be Scott.
Okay. Fall Guys could be coming to Xbox and Game Pass. This from VG247. The Fall Guys Twitter account replied to a tweet from Xbox UK about recommending releases in its Game Pass subscription service, asking if they could play. It's possible this is a hint that Mediatonic's game is set to come to Xbox consoles as well as Microsoft's Game Pass platform. Fall Guys launched back in August 2020 for PlayStation 4 and PC. By the end of the month, the game had sold more than 7 million copies on Steam alone and had become the most downloaded PlayStation Plus game of all time. Research firm Superdata also reported that Fall Guys made $185 million on launch on PC alone, making it the most profitable digital PC release since 2016 Overwatch. By the time of September, Fall Guys have shifted more than 10 million units on Steam. While the game has been hugely successful and lucrative for developer Mediatonic, Fall Guys was pitched to and turned down by 10 different publishers before developer Digital stepped up to back up the multiplayer title. At least last count, in September of last year, Microsoft also announced the Xbox Game Pass boosted more than 15 million subscribers, a 50% increase on 10 million the service had in April 2020.
You know, there's a lot of Devolver Digital games on Game Pass, like Ape Out, so I'm not surprised that it would be coming to Xbox Game Pass. By the way, from what I understand, the population of that game has dropped a lot. And I think it's because that's the kind of game in which you have fun for 3 months and then say, yeah, I'm done.
Yeah, I saw a lot of gameplay for it, and it looked like something I'd play for 5 or 10 minutes and just be done with it. Even if I got a crown, I'd be like, that would be it. That would be like, okay, I'm done. You know, I'm going to go do something else now.
TJ, you played a lot.
Beat on that bone for me.
Hey, TJ, you played a lot of Fall Guys, didn't you?
Yes, I have. I still play it.
Okay. 100%. I mean, here's the thing. It's the sort of game that people are either going to try it out, have fun for a month, and say, okay, I'm done with it. And there's going to be people who just, you know, this is my deal. This is my thing. Has the game changed that much in terms of gameplay, or is it just a lot of new... what's it called? Cosmetics?
They introduce new cosmetics. They do new levels per season. And, the style of the game has not changed, but they continue to put new stuff out per season. And then they do, like, midway season updates as well, where they add new stuff. Yeah, it's dropped quite a bit from, like, its all-time peak was 172,000 according to SteamDB, and right now its current is sitting around 9.5 or 9,500.
Well, you know, being on Game Pass would give it an influx of new players, because I know there are a lot of Xbox players. On every game video trailer that was in the Xbox channel, they would always be like, when is Fall Guys coming? So I think,
no idea.
No, I'm just saying, they were always asking, when is Fall Guys coming on these, even though it had nothing to do with the game that the trailer was for. Mm. So, and yeah, you know, I mean, Microsoft also has Among Us on Game Pass as well. So, yeah, they are going after those culturally significant games, you know, that sprout up, like Among Us and Fall Guys, that sort of stuff. You know, yeah. Stuff that are, even if they're just flashing the pans in the zeitgeist, you know, it's like they want to give their subscribers the full spectrum.
I wouldn't call Fall Guys a flash in the pan. I mean,
well, I'm saying even games that are flash in the pan. I'm not saying Fall Guys is a flash in the pan.
Right.
I think it's maybe it plateaued, I guess.
Like, even at 9,500 players,
that's
right,
a lot
now on Steam. That's, I mean, it's still doing better than things like Red Dead Online, Conan Exiles, and even PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds. It's an easy to jump in and out of game.
Wait, is it crossplay?
It is not crossplay.
Uh huh.
But it doesn't waste a lot of your time, though. Like, you go in, play some rounds, and you're done. Like,
well, here's the thing. Microsoft likes to have games that are on the Xbox and games that are in Game Pass for PC to be crossplay. So I'm wondering if that might change. Just like, you know, Microsoft pressured Sony into saying, you know, you should have crossplay on Fortnite.
Yeah, who knows? Like, I can't. I don't know if Fall Guys has, like, the tools and resources to make that from scratch. They are kind of. I will mention that there are other things I'd like to see in Fall Guys before I saw crossplay. I would like to see private lobbies in that game, which apparently they're working on, but they're not quite there yet. But I would like to have private lobbies where, like, me and a group of my friends can put together our own, like, private matches.
Yeah. I just think the biggest evidence that it's coming to Xbox Game Pass is that a lot of Devolver Digital games are on Xbox Game Pass, so they obviously have a relationship with that publisher.
Like, I think you're bound to see it on Xbox eventually, whether it's in Game Pass or not.
You were about to say otherwise?
What?
You said, it no, sounded like you were going to say something else.
Oh, I was saying that I think that it's going to eventually end up on Xbox, whether it ends up on Game Pass.
No, I mean, before I interrupted you, but, private lobbies would be fine, because, you know, sometimes you just want to play with people you want to play with. I mean, that's the entire point of Xbox Live.
Right. Well, like, there's an opportunity to create, like, community-driven events in that game, but you can't really do that with what you have right now. Like, even Twitch, like, when they had it on Twitch Rivals, they had to do special workarounds to do that. I just think that they need to create a private lobby system. And they need to create a spectate mode that you can enter specifically just to watch other players play.
Do you think they're basically in a holding pattern while they make a sort of like a Fall Guys 1.5?
I don't think so. I feel like they're taking it season by season and just sort of trying to implement what they can. I think that they're an indie developer that got caught up in like a lot of success that they might not have expected.
It's not as much of a surprise as the Among Us things, because Among Us was like on Steam for 5 years, and all of a sudden it blows up, you know, years and years later. What are you going to say, Scott?
Yeah, I mean, the game has done very well, and I guess it's stabilized right now in its usage and popularity, and yeah, I guess there's not much to add. I hope they develop it some more and I mean, it's their flagship game, Epic's, so, yeah, I don't know. I guess I'll have to wait and see what else they do with it.
DJ? Are you done? Is there anything more to say about this?
I don't have much more to say. I like Fall Guys. I really do. I'm happy to see the game continues to be successful, and I'm happy to see that, like, despite the player drop, I've never had an issue. I've never waited for more than like a minute or two to get into a match. And
do you think it's really? Go ahead.
It's kind of the perfect time waster game, like when I have a little bit of downtime between things I'm doing. So I can literally just jump into a Fall Guys match, see how far I can go, and get out and move on with my life in about 15 minutes if I want to. So I like that game.
Have you ever played Duck Game?
I have.
Oh, okay. Because the one thing about Duck Game is that it just has so many levels in it. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really what Fall Guys needs. It needs, like, four times the number of types of levels and games that it has now to really broaden the spectrum so that people don't get bored of playing the same thing every other thing. Like, oh, we're doing this again. Oh, we're doing this again.
That's true. I've heard them say that they hate certain levels and they wish to avoid them. So having variety would help a lot and make it less predictable.
Anyway, look for our show notes at GamingPodcast.net, along with industry news and our gaming history articles. We enjoy your feedback, so leave us comments on our blog at GamingPodcast.net. Also, hit us up at Facebook.com/GamingPodcast. Subscribe to us on iTunes. Leave some iTunes comments. You can find me at Jonah Falcon on Twitter.
You can find me at Shardman Moore.
You can find me at Johnny Chugs.
And we will see you next week for our anniversary. Yes, 600 episodes.
Woo-hoo!
There are not many podcast that can brag having 600 episodes.
That's very true.
I think I've been.
So, do you have anything planned for it?
Well, Paul can't make it because he's having some issues, which we won't discuss. And I'm pretty sure I can get Dan to write an intro, and maybe either Derek, who originally did this podcast, Derek Schaumer. And his wife originally started this way back in 2007. And here we are 14 years later.
Wow, it's an amazing journey.
Yep. And I was a part of this podcast for 400 episodes, meaning I've been doing this and I've been running this twice as long as the original hosts. And they did 200.
Wow.
Yep.
Very impressive.
Yep. Who knows? Maybe I'll get Gamer Tag Radio's oh, damn it! I can't believe I forgot his name. I'm gonna shoot myself. I'm gonna have to edit this so it doesn't make. So I'm not gonna sound like an idiot.
Wait, are you talking about Danny or
Yeah, Danny Pena, right. So yeah, maybe I, because I'm Facebook friends with him, you know. Maybe I can get Danny Pena to congratulate us and say, guess what, we're at 900, so screw you. Wait, I think it's at 800 actually. I'm trying to remember. They started very early. They started in 2005, so they've had. I'm gonna see how many they've done. It shouldn't be too hard here. They're at 761, so they're at 161 episodes ahead of us. That's basically almost the run of the original podcasters. That, you know, more than we've done. That's what happens when you have a 2-year head start. But yeah, I mean, I've met Danny several times at E3. So he's not a stranger. He's not a Facebook friend in that way in which, oh yeah, we have 200 mutual friends. No, it's not like that. So, Anyways, yeah, 600. I'll try and make. We'll see what happens. I don't know. I don't know how to celebrate it. Maybe we'll just low key it and. Well, we can't low key it now, can we? 600. So the other thing is that personally, for me, I'm at 432 for the video game roundtables, which I started. I think I started in 2009. So, and I was inspired by 1UP. The 1UP podcast had to disband because 1UP was. Oh, you know, last week was the 11th anniversary of Yu-Gi-Oh! Closing down EGM and doing mass firings at 1UP. That was a really sad time. I know a lot of people who grew up with EGM. Did you ever? I'm pretty sure you did, Scott, right? You read a lot of Electronic Gaming Monthly? Yeah.
Yes. I used to read it all the time. It was nice to have a magazine to read about games that weren't Nintendo or Nintendo Power. So that's where I would go to is Electronic Gaming. Find out about TurboGrafx and Sega Genesis games.
How about you? Did you read a lot of EGM?
Of course.
Okay. I did not, because I was basically PC for most of my gaming life. So I wrote for Computer Games Magazine. I read PC Gamer and Computer Gaming Weekly. You know. I mean, EGM occasionally, if the cover was interesting. Remember, magazines were expensive. I mean, back then even. You know, $8 yeah. was a lot. So, but at least it came with a disc.
Yeah, I think that's how I got Doom demo originally. It was an Electronic Gaming Monthly. Yeah, man, those were the days where you got little demo discs and get to try out different games and all these weird things that would be on there. It was very fun times.
Yeah. The first issue of EGM was in 1989.
Wow.
That's wild.
And then they revived it, and then it died again.
That's very unfortunate.
Yes, I know. It's sad. The fact of the matter is, you know, print is expensive. And when you can do it on a website, why bother? I mean, you still have magazines like PC Gamer. And you still have, well, one magazine, Game Informer, it's basically GameStop. GameStop runs it. So it goes as GameStop goes, and Microsoft saved GameStop, so it'll Game Informer will go a little bit longer. I think for computer gaming magazines to survive, I think they have to go more into the cultural aspects than actual game reviews. Because game reviews, those magazines come out like three months after the game has been released. They're kind of useless. So, anyways, we will see you next week.
Happy gaming, everyone.
Have fun, be cool, play games, y'all.